real. Do you see what I'm trying to say? It is the initiation of sublime heartbreak is the initiation that makes you a mother. And if you want an image of it, take the image of the Pietà. What do you think she's doing at every moment? A part of her is holding the crucified body of everything in her arms. Because it's her creation that is living and dying and suffering and yearning. It's in her arms. You're born into her arms. You suffer in her arms and you die in her arms. And she's holding you all the time, and she's not holding you with, there, there, my child, I know you, you know, it's your karma to go through this. Do you think that she thinks like that? Do you really? Because if you do, for God's sake, stop it. Because you'll never have the initiation. Do you understand? Do you seriously think that your divine mother, as you go through a terrible heartbreak and want to kill yourself, is just sitting there, my dear, this is her karma. She was naughty in her last life to a slug. She hit that man on the head a few lifetimes ago, so she has to go through this now, and she'll learn, and if she dies, that's fine. You really believe that's her attitude? If you do, you do not know a scrap of a scrap of a scrap of the motherhood of God. You know nothing about it. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Because she's burning in your pain also. She's suffering as you, with you. And she is trying to feed you the strength, the stamina, the wisdom, the incredible compassion that you will need to get through it. And she's doing all of those things with total love for you. And if you're going to be initiated into her, you are going to have to become a person who takes the whole world, the whole crucified world, the world as it is crucified, and you have to be her in the Pietà, and you have to hold the world, and you have to see the bleeding onto your garments, and you have to look into the shattered face of your children, the murdered face of the raped child, you have to look into the starving face, you have to look into the crucified face of the AIDS victim, you have to look into Matthew Shepherd's face and see what on earth you have kept alive that crucified that boy. Do you see? That's the mother's ferocity. That's the ferocity of love. Because love, if you feel it, is so fierce because it says, so you're feeling it now, be it now, act from it now, accept its price now, allow the rays of sublime heartbreak to engulf you, not just to touch your feet, but to engulf you, to come down from the splendor of her heart and absolutely possess you until you are alive in it. That's what you're feeling. You are blessed for the agony that you feel because it's a part of hers. It's very important that we get this now, otherwise the world will die out. So, you know what's wonderful about getting this a little bit? The little bit that I've got it is that I can't pass an image of her without wanting somewhere to stretch out my hand to her and say, I love you. Thank you for doing all of this. Thank you for feeling all of this. Thank you for always giving all of this. And if there's anything in my heart that can delight you for a moment, if there's anything that I can do or give or say that could bring you joy for one moment as you undertake this huge transformation of everything in you and pay the huge price for this transformation, I give it to you. And you know something else? That when you approach her like that, you will feel an enormous smile in your heart. You'll feel her living smile. Because she is like, you know, the great mystery of Mary is this. Do you want the mystery of Mary? Yes? Are you sure? You know what's so strange about Mary? This will freak your brains out and end your separations forever when you get it. All the other goddesses are sort of divine figures. They float around, they're wonderful, they do amazing things, they are important aspects of the mother. And they're all fantastic powers to turn to. And I bless them all and I celebrate them all. But there's something unique about her. And you know what that uniqueness is and why she will break the heart of humanity until the end of time? You know why? It's because she was a human girl. Because at the age of 13, she was a girl, very holy and very dedicated, who went on this stupendous journey because of the yes she said, and then paid all the price for that yes as a human being. So she knows everything that you are going through, not as a goddess, but as a woman, and as the woman in you. Just imagine her life. Imagine what it is to birth a child whom you know from the beginning of his life is going to suffer terribly because he's an outcast. He may have been born a bastard. We don't know the whole ins and outs of that story. But there's no doubt that a child like that would have been very oppressed from an early age. And then you have to let him go. You have to let him experience everything and suffer everything because this enormous love that is trying to be born through him is a love that can never come cheap, and you know that because you felt it yourself. You've already suffered enough. Immediately you have to go into the desert. You have to go out as a poor woman. You have to go into nowhere. You have to trust the unknown, and then you have to give him up. He has to go away. He has to go through all of his pain. You don't know what's going to happen to him. You just trust and trust, and then he's illumined and he does this astounding work. But you see that when he first gives his sermon in Capernaum, when he comes down from the mountain and he goes to Nazareth and he talks to these people about the stupendous discovery that has been born in him, they want to kill him. And you're there, you see it, you see the hatred, you see the unbelievable hatred of the beautiful, you see it, and it wounds you, because you know that one day that must happen, that one day that force will win, and one day you will have to stand as she did stand by the cross, and see the beautiful one, and the beloved of the world, and the great love, crucified and broken and tortured and humiliated beyond imagining. And all she could do was to be with him and trust and trust and wait and know that some divine purpose would be unfolded that neither of them knew. And that came on the third day. And in the great traditions, there are two people who are said to have seen him first. It's either Mary Magdalene or his mother. And I actually believe it was her. And then the journey isn't over, because then he goes. And he leaves you with these squabbling, idiotic disciples. He leaves you with all that lunacy, Peter hating John, and John and Peter hating Mary, and Mary saying that she has the realization, and Peter saying she hasn't the realization, and all that rubbish. And then the boys' club get hold of it, and you're stuck with all of this wrangling, crazy humanity, and this stupendous light that has been born in the world, and you try and earth it in your being so that it can never die. And she waits, and she waits, and she prays, and she prays. And then in those years afterwards, in a room in Jerusalem, the light comes down at Pentecost because she is in the room. That's a very important detail. She is the conduit of the light. She births the light once more. And then she knits the light to her body in adoration and in prayer and in humility. And I want to tell you about a vision that I had of her as an old woman. When I was going through my break with Mrs. Bednarz, who's called Mira. Her real name is Mrs. Bednarz, actually. It was a horrible, horrible, unspeakable, violent, ghastly experience, which I won't go into. But at the beginning of it, when I thought I would die, I'd be killed because of the death threats that were coming and horrible stuff, and Eric was dying of cancer, I prayed to the real mother, I prayed to the Virgin to reveal herself to me. And one night I had this amazing dream. I was going through a garish, horrible town full of blaring, drunken musicians, and I got to this tent. And there in the tent were all the fake mothers. And there they were sitting with dripping with jewels and dripping with gold, and they were dripping all the power and the money of the whore of Babylon. And there around them were their slavish disciples all moaning and hitting each other on the head, because of course one fake mother had disciples who believed that she was the only mother, and there was another fake mother who believed she was the only mother. So there they were, killing each other, hating each other, being jealous of each other, the whole lunatic bundle of the fake mothers. And they were all there. And I'm not going to name them, because you have to find that out for yourself. But they were all there. And it was horrible. It was as if the facade had been stripped away. And this abomination of imitation of the real mother, that they are all Jehovah's in drag, these people. They're just authoritarian and fascist in drag, and they're doing terrible damage to the real mother because they are the patriarchal projection of the real mother and not the real mother herself. And I ran out of the tent, and I ran and ran and ran into the country, and I came to this very lonely, quiet farm, and there was just a little farmhouse, and there was just a tree, and there was an old donkey by the tree. An old donkey. And I sat in the field, utterly despairing, on a stone. And it seemed to be for hours, and then it was dawn. And then the door of the old farmhouse opened, and this old woman in black, with this incredibly beautiful old peasant face, very lined, with the most amazing eyes and stare you have ever seen, came out of the farmhouse, and I knew that it was Mary, as an old woman living alone. And then I knew that the donkey was the donkey that had carried him, and she was looking after it. And that's what she's looking after in all of us, the donkey that carries the love consciousness. And it's very simple and very direct and very down home and unspeakably humble, and has nothing to do with power or money or guruhood or masterhood, and everything to do with motherhood. And because of my training, I thought I would have to go and kneel at her feet. So I went and tried to kneel at her feet, and she laughed. And she pointed to my shoes, and my shoelaces were undone. And she smiled, and you know what she did? She got on her knees, and she tied my shoelaces. Now that is the real mother. You can imagine any of these Jehovah's in drag tying your shoelaces. You have a stronger imagination than I think anybody in this room has. Do you get it? And that mother is somebody you can console and you can hold and you can give real joy to, because the miracle of Mary is that she's human and divine, divine and human. More human than you can ever be yet, and more divine than you yet know you are. Am I making myself clear? And if you plunge into the gorgeous lunacy of that relationship, then you discover that you're not just asking your mother to save you and help you and embody you or do whatever you want, whatever time you choose. You also have the sublime power as a child of the mother to give back love to her and heal her. And heal her so that she can go on trying to save this planet. So now, my friends, let's do the second exercise. And we won't have time for the second one, but I feel that what we've done already is a great excavation. And please keep in touch with me at the Center of Divine Feminine, because I'm going to be teaching practices for the rest of my life now. I'll be raving on, you know, but I will also be teaching the practices. And it's at the back, my card. And we'll get to the Center of Divine Feminine. We're going to have the best teachers on the feminine, none of whom will claim to be enlightened, let me tell you. And none of whom will be gurus, and all of whom will just be wanting to give away the real food and the real wine to anybody who wants to eat it and be responsible for it. The age of the pseudo-masters is really over now. It's the time of the children, the brothers and the sisters, to share the experience. That's what the mother is bringing in. It's a huge revolution, and we have to unlearn so much to be open to it. But it's really the meaning of Islam, of the fellowship of Islam, isn't it? We are all equal in God. And Muhammad's sublime example was his humility before God and never claiming to be enlightened. Muhammad, the greatest saint of the whole tradition, never claimed to be enlightened. He, at the end of his life, he said, "I cry out to God 70 times a day for forgiveness." And this was a person worshipped by his whole world, saying, "Let's get real around here." That's the truth. So now, would you just center yourself in the loneliness and the pain and the incredible compassion of the mother who is doing all of this for us and who is suffering so much at this moment. And please, please, activate the depths of your compassion by really thinking on all of those things in the world which frighten you and remembering that they happen in her and as her and that she is suffering them at a depth which is yet unimaginable to all of us because she's suffering them without our consoling beliefs in karma, our consoling beliefs in detachment. Oh. Now, from where you are, just sit to do this. Imagine that Mary, in whatever form you love her, and maybe it's your dog, maybe it's your cat that can be Mary, anything that you love completely and whose suffering moves you completely can stand for the suffering of the mother. That's the amazing thing. When my cat was dying, I knew it was the mother dying. And I wept as I've never wept before because I saw her infinite courage and her infinite surrender and her infinite beauty in this amazing tabby that had been my cat wife for 2 years, my beloved. And as Eric and I lay on the ground in the bedroom with her, as she was dying, with her lying on the ground, this divine light came everywhere because there was so much love. So much love. Heartbroken love. From her to us, from us to her. And she was present, as she always is, in pure love, without a bargain. Oh. And all I could do as she was dying was simply to stroke her. And she would try with her last strength to purr. And she didn't die when I was there. She died in Eric's arms. And her last gesture on this earth was to try and reach out with her paw to touch his face. And the Dalai Lama says on television that animals have no emotions. When is somebody going to get up and say, Your Holiness, 70% of what you say is indispensable to the survival of the world, and 30% is absolute fucking rubbish. So please get rid of that 30% since you happen to be a spokesman for the truth at the moment. Funnily enough, they don't let me get in to see him these days. They used to, of course, when I believed in their whole system. So, whatever you love, totally is her. And whatever you love totally, you feel its suffering infinitely. And you bring that being or that image of her or that representation of her that you love most, and you imagine now that it is lying in your lap, with its head in your lap, and you feel infinite tenderness for it, for her in it, and you stroke it, and you just say very, very, very softly, Mary. Mary, 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 Mary. And you just say it in such a way that you express your intense gratitude and your intense love and your intense sorrow and your intense awe. I will be thinking of my cat. My baby. My baby.
Let's just all say together, knowing that the way we say it will help her and will console her and will bring her true adoration and will give her strength to go on giving us her strength. Let us just say those words. Mary, very gently, I'll count three and let all of us just fill this room. And let it be gentle, let it be a whisper, let it come from that deep, deep place. One, two, three. Mary. It helps if you put your head on your hand on your heart. You lower your head to your heart so that your mind can go into your heart. This is a wonderful way of doing any heart practice because it humbles the mind before the heart. And if you say in the heart, Mary, 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 or if it helps, sometimes I imagine that I'm meeting her on the day of the crucifixion. And she's alone in a room, and she's beyond tears. And that all you can do is just to hold her and thank her for everything that she has allowed to give. And just say, Mary, Mary, Mary. Whoever draws near will never fall asleep, and the rays of sublime heartbreak will engulf him. Give me 5 more minutes. We need this time. And if you could just speak gently from where you are now, would you just throw back some words into the air? My deepest place of sorrow is my deepest place of strength because that is where my wholest love comes from. Unbearable joy and unbearable pain are just the same. That is the real truth. Is the rose broken or is it open? How can you tell? I can't keep from crying, but what are your tears? What are your tears made of? You know that in the Christian church there is said to be one of the holiest gifts of all, the gift of tears. And that's why you can tell that the churches are barren, because there's not one moment in the service where you are ever taken anywhere near tears. So how can she be present and how can he be present? Because let me tell you, when Jesus is in the room, the tears flow. And they're tears of agony and they're tears of rapture. And they're tears of infinite gratitude for being infinitely forgiven. All together. Yes. The tears of thawing, aren't they? The ice, the heart is like a block of black ice until you let the sun of the divine compassion in. And then it bleeds tears and it thaws and it opens and it never closes again. You're so beautiful, so beautiful.
You see how much wisdom you find in yourself if you do these practices, right? Because these are the holiest technology working in the core of your life. If you do that practice and then say, Mother of God, save me, you know that you can save her too. There's another level of intensity in your relationship. Anything else? Anybody else like to say something miraculous or unmiraculous or simple? Yes, we come back to her because at least they got her. Well, that's why I'm starting the church. It cannot come in an old vessel. The new wine cannot be put into old bottles. It has to come into a new bottle. God knows if I can make that new bottle, or my friends and I who are making the church can make that new bottle. But my God and my Mary, we are going to try. And I beg you who are concerned with this to help us. Do you think we can change the whole history of Christianity on our own? We can't. This is not about gurus and masters and experts changing things and rewriting things. It's about beings who really are on fire with Jesus and Mary and Allah and the sublime revelation of divine love, getting together to try and make a service that will help inspire people, wait a second, and help inspire people and bringing in the revolutionary energy of love that is radical in all of its aspects. Because how can the priesthood, with its elitism and with its hierarchialism, with its hatred of women, its hatred of the body, its homophobia, its unbelievable sucking the dick of the rich, how can they bring in the Christ? And that's putting it mildly. Let's just go forward now. Let's just do one last act. Doesn't mean they're not wonderful people in the church, there are, but they are in prison. The church is not going to heal, it's going to end. That'll be the healing. It's a good question. The place of Mary and Jesus, that's a lovely question. I shall think about that question. It should be the heart of Mary and Jesus. That's a good question. I'm going to think about that. Thank you. Why call it a church if it's a new thing, if the church has failed? Because I think the Mass is important, but the Mass was given after all in a room, wasn't it? And the Mass is being said always in the heart. Yes. Oh, bullshit. Oh, I think so. The church and the people are inseparable. The church has failed. The church has failed to represent the Christ. And it's failed from almost from the very beginning, if you look at Christian history. Maybe the whole idea of the church was wrong from the beginning. Sorry, I mean, I didn't mean to say bullshit, but we'll talk about that later, but if you like. I just don't believe that. I think it may be that the whole idea of a church, in the way that the church constructed it, was wrong from the very beginning, because it made him into a savior, it put him outside humanity instead of being a mystic liberator, and that the churches should have been places where the mystic disciplines were taught and people were empowered, but hierarchy prevented that. And the idea of the church being the mediator between us and him was a fatal mistake from the beginning. That's what I think. And yes, those are the saints and the lovers, yes, but they can be of any religion, of course. And they're not just Christians. So let's, at this moment, just take a very deep breath. And I'm deeply willing to learn from your wisdom about the invisible church, because my anger at the church is so immense that it may be blocking some vital information, I'm sure. Don't you be too sure either, because we might both be wrong. Wouldn't that be funny?
That's conceivable, isn't it? Yes, exactly. Wrong, incomplete is a better version, really. Let us really know that by being together here in the space of sacred love and sacred passion this morning, we haven't been doing just intellectual work or heart work. We've really been creating a body of light in this room, a body of the light of sacred passion, of the sacred passion of the heart, that my friend over there would say was the secret invisible church, and that I would say was the heart of the divine humanity. And maybe we're talking about the same thing. And I'm sure in the depths we are. But whatever words you bring to it, it is here. It's come to help us. We have invoked it, and as far as we have been open, we have permeated by it, and its power is now given to us to give away. So in the last act of our being together, let us dedicate in the core of ourselves the energy of this morning to whatever cause in the world that we feel needs it most. And I will dedicate the glorious energy of this morning, of your heart and my heart, to the healing of Christianity in whatever form that may come, even if that healing does not agree with my theories. I'm prepared to go that far. Yes. Isn't that amazing? I just want the Christ to come through. And I also dedicate the energy of this day and of our time together to the healing of all patriarchal distortions of Muhammad's sacred message in Islam and all patriarchal distortions in any of the sects of Sufism that wish to transmit that sacred message through the grace of the Divine Motherhood of God. And if you want to speak out loud your dedications, that will be wonderful. But if you don't, that's fine too. But if you want to get up and just dedicate, how lovely. So we'll sit here for 5 minutes, and what happens will happen. So be it. bless us all and to make us all complete.
From Sheikh Ansari. Oh, my beloved, may my mind reel with revelations of you. May my heart blaze with the mysteries of your grace. May my tongue move only to sing your praise. Oh, my beloved, give me a heart I can pour out in thanksgiving, and give me life so I can lavish it, working for the salvation of the world. Yes, thank you. God bless us all, in the church, out of it, beyond the church, within the non-church, whatever, all of us, immensely. Thank you.